Your body, your physiology, your energy is a divinely created sending and receiving unit. And this goes to every level of psychic awareness, every level of empathy, and everything in between, because this energetic body that overlays your physical body, that animates your physical body, has so many gifts and so many abilities. And it is in this time, which is a catalytic time, the end of a material age and the dawning of a new age of truth, where rather than one student being selected by one master to have the deep truth teaching, the information is for all to see.
Welcome to the Spirit Sisters podcast. My name is Karina Machado, and I'm the author of Spirit Sisters, Women's True Stories of the Paranormal. In this podcast, I'll revisit the women behind my most unforgettable stories and unearth new tales to chill, intrigue, astound, and offer hope. You'll hear first-hand accounts of sacred journeys, spirit encounters, near-death experiences, angels, mysteries, marvels, and love more powerful than death. Whatever you believe about the afterlife, I invite you to open your minds and hearts as ordinary people reveal their extraordinary encounters. I acknowledge the Dharawal people, who are the traditional custodians of the land of Sutherland Shire in Australia, where I live and record Spirit Sisters, and I recognise their continuing connection to lands, waters and community. I pay respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures and to elders past, present and emerging. You're listening to Spirit Sisters. I'm your host, Karina Machado. I'm thrilled to be back with you all. I promised that I'd be popping in with powerful conversations that I handpick, and here's one that I think you will love. Today, I'm introducing Ben Medhurst. Ben is a husband, a dad, a tradesman. He lives in Queensland, and he also happens to be a full-body channel for a discarnate collective who share profound wisdom through him. At a very pivotal time in history, they say. So, as Ben shares in his first ever interview, he's been primed for this his entire life. From his childhood growing up amidst the beauty of the bush, Ben learnt to connect with a source beyond his physical self. Always curious about life's biggest questions, as a teen, Ben was catapulted into a spiritual world he struggled to comprehend following the death of his elder brother, which blew open his psychic faculties. A few years later, a profoundly mystical dream paved the way for his apprenticeship with a famous Indian guru, and eventually the arrival of the collective who work through him today at this transformational point in our timeline, which the collective calls the dawning of a new age of truth. There's so much more to Ben's story. I encourage you to listen in for all the extraordinary details and, towards the end, a treat, a direct channeling from the group who speaks through Ben. I'm going to welcome Ben back onto the show later on in the year, and we'd both love you to send questions that you'd like me to ask the wise beings who speak through him. So if you're on YouTube, you can drop a comment, or you can send your questions through my website or on my social media. All the links are in the show notes below. In the meantime, enjoy my conversation with Ben Medhurst, sharing his story publicly for the first time. Hi, Ben. Welcome to Spirit Sisters.
Thanks very much, Karina. I'm really happy to be here.
So I'm going to read out a little bit of an introduction that you sent me so that our readers can get it, our listeners. I wonder if that was a Freudian slip. Book coming, Ben. Our listeners can get a bit of a sense of you, who you are, a little snapshot of your story, and then we will dive into unpacking what all the many fascinating points that you bring up in your bio. So here we go. Ben is a full body channel. He discovered his sacred gifts while spending time in pristine nature at a young age. After seeking far and wide for the answers to the universe, his prayers were heard. A great spiritual teacher appeared and began the instruction to find the answers within. What followed were years of self-inquiry, meditation, yoga, breathwork, and inspired creativity, leading to an inner communication with the Masters of Light. Ben has a simple yet powerful ability to share these gifts, allowing, enabling, and reminding others that they're, sorry, of reminding others of their own innate divinity through a grounded and practical source connection that is an inspiration to those who are seeking to find their inner happiness. As well as being a full body channel, Ben is an advanced pranic healer, Sudarshan Kriya initiate, and I might get you to explain what that is later, Ben, Ashtanga yoga instructor, Vipassana meditation practitioner, inventor, musician, and also a highly skilled tradesman. Ben lives on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, Australia, with his wife, Myra Medhurst, and their six-year-old son, Amos, and a beautiful dingo dog called Honey. So thank you so much, Ben, for coming on Spirit Sisters. We've got a lot to talk about. We've had a pre-chat, and I was saying before we pressed record that I've filled pages of a notebook just with our pre-chat. So I know we've got lots to explore today. There's probably anywhere we can begin, but one thing that really stood out to me that made me want to get in touch with you and that you also brought up in our little preamble was that this is a moment in your life where you're now speaking out. You're sharing your gifts, you're sharing your story, you're sharing what's happened to you, which is an extraordinary sequence of events throughout your life journey, and you're letting go of fears of what others may think to step out into this public sphere. Would that be an accurate description?
Definitely, yes. I'll just start off by thanking my beautiful wife, Myra, because she wrote those words for my bio. And that's right on the point of what you're bringing up, just to sit and listen to, you know, things about yourself is not always easy for people, you know. That's a real center point of my journey and what my channeling brings through. So we can get onto that in a little. Really, yeah, feel privileged and honored to have a chat to you today. And so happy.
Oh, that's so lovely. And I'm very happy to have you on too. So obviously there's so much that's intriguing in the bio that Myra wrote before we get to the great spiritual teacher who appeared, which is a wonderful entry point, I think. But before we get there, I think it would be a good idea perhaps to wind back the clock to your childhood, because you had the childhood that you shared with me in our chat really seemed to me to have set the foundation for everything that has come since in your life. And your connection to nature, very beautiful, was then, is now. Maybe, Ben, please take us back to your childhood and share a little bit around what happened then to set you up for today.
Sure. Yeah. I think as an adult, it's only when you look back on your childhood that you realize, you know, a lot of the things that happened to you, that you created, I guess, on one level, but were quite unconscious of. I was really privileged that, I guess during the early 1980s, my dad used to take us out bush a lot. And, you know, ever since I was tiny, I think actually I saw a photo the other day of a bronze Holden Sandman, the panel vans on a dirt road pulled over. I think it was on the Stuart Highway near Coober Pedy somewhere. And my brother and sister, who were older than me at the time, were sitting by the car. I think my dad must have been taking the photo and my mum was perhaps somewhere else. And I said to my dad, "Where was I in this photo?" He said, "Oh, actually, I built you like a little box in the back of the panel van because you were only a baby, and that's where you rode all the way to Coober Pedy and back." So yeah, that was Dad. He loved taking his bush. He still loves the bush. He goes away a few months a year solo to the remote parts of the Northern Territory and sleeps in a little boat by himself in croc-infested rivers and those sort of stuff. So he's a real nature man. And he really gave that to us. He bought a bush property. I guess you'd call it like a hobby farm, but it was 120 acres in the high country in Victoria, bordered on all sides by a national park. And so when we'd go there, we would be completely cut off from everything. There was just creek water, no power, a beautiful little cabin. And my older brother and sister were quite a handful, I think, when they were younger. And so at that point in my life, every other weekend we'd be down there for 2, 3 days and a long time over the holidays. And I just had so much freedom. I would walk down to a really quiet spot in the bush, sitting on the river, sit on a log and just dissolve. I realize now that I was in a state of communion with nature and union. I had a couple of experiences where wild animals came up to me, and it's as if I was in a trance and I was just witnessing them. And no matter how close they came, I wasn't feeling like, a human would, and thinking, oh wow, that animal's close to me. I remember just watching the beauty of nature. And I think I shared earlier with you, Karina, that one day a snake actually crawled over me and I was completely still, and I wasn't in fear. And it was only until the red-bellied black snake swam back in the water, having thought I was probably a log, that I realized that, well, that was pretty full on. We had platypus and koalas and wallabies and, so much bird life. And so that had a huge impact, I believe, on my connection to kind of whatever you want to call it, source energy, Mother Nature, and just to be so open. I used to watch energy as well, all the yoga. I've now come to know that it's prana that I was seeing, different kinds of prana from the water and the trees and the air. And I just thought everyone sort of saw that, which I think that everyone's capable of seeing, but they're not necessarily aware of it. And intertwined with that in my childhood, I also had a lot of time on the Mornington Peninsula with my cousins. And I had two particular female cousins that were probably 6, 7 years older to me, two sisters, and they were my godmother's daughters. And I have a very strong spiritual bond with my godmother. And we just see them the once a year over summer. And because I was the, youngest boy, they would just take me on these amazing adventures again in nature. And they would do things like set up these fantasy worlds where they'd put a blindfold on me and put me in a chair. I think they used to put me in a little wheelbarrow and say, okay, the spaceship's getting to ready to take off now. We're going to go visit another planet. And so they go and shake the wheelbarrow and walk me into the bush. So obviously with the blindfold on, I could see all this imagery in my head, and they would have gone ahead and set up the whole bush with all of these amazing experiences, like pulling lollies in trees. And they'd say, reach out, this is a Mars bar tree or whatever it was. And I'd reach out and the chocolate, stuck on a branch, and I'd taste it and go, wow, this is amazing. And then they said, all right, we're going to go see the princess of whatever planet it was. But you're only allowed to look at her for a split second, otherwise you'll turn to stone. So we'd go into the very back of my grandparents' block, and there was a greenhouse in the corner, and they had my sister all set up on a throne that was covered in tinsel, and she had glitter all over her face and face painting and a crown and, a full costume. And they'd just like lift my blindfold up for a split second, and I'd get this glimpse of this amazing, scene in front of me, and then they take it down again. Yeah, it was amazing. And I guess what I've realized that those experiences, because when I look back, that was probably when I was, all the way from a toddler, but it continued through till I was 9 or 10 years old. And during those, transformative years, I believe, with kids, especially around the age of 6, 7, and 8, the cycles of seven that a lot of people talk about, that imagination faculty and that connection to nature and wonder and real magic was, really kept open. And I wasn't told not to, you're too old to do that or whatever, because it was just so much fun and we had all that time together. So, in my journey with spirituality, It's been referred to quite a few times by my own inner channel, and but that was a fundamental part of my development of keeping the connection to that source energy, to your own spirit, to your own soul, and to the greater, universe. And I guess it got revisited again when I was about 14, again another 7 years, and being a young man in a kind of, middle class Melbourne family. There's a lot of things happening. I was going to a, private boys' school in Melbourne, and I was, involved in leadership, in sport and school. And I found that for whatever reason, because that part of me was still open, the sensitivity, it was strong, but I managed to navigate that. And, sometimes there's a crucial couple of important people in your life that encourage it. My parents were definitely not encouraging that part of my life, but at the same time, great relationship with my parents. They didn't discourage it either. They kind of just let me be and say, well, that's him, that's who he is. And that is massive, I believe, when your parents accept you for who you are. And then going into young adulthood, there was a few crucial factors that forced me to kind of then decide that I wanted to work with this energy as opposed to try to push it away. Because, when you pass through puberty and your senses kind of, if they're still active, can become even more magnified. And I really had that experience. I had a few years where I was totally overwhelmed by my senses and, not just the physical senses, but the kind of etheric senses as well. So I had a lot of interesting experiences in those times, and I fought against it a little bit. Yet, as I say, there was a couple of crucial moments and crucial points where the universe kind of stepped in the form of, friends and family. Yeah, just gave me enough to keep moving in that direction. Yeah.
Thank you so much for that summary. There's so much there that comes to mind. I love the very evocative description of the games that you would play, that your elder cousins would sort of lead you on. And that's so beautiful and so rare. And it reminds me of, some favorite childhood stories that I would read, Na the Chronicles of Narnia and the Magic Faraway Tree. Like, it's got overtones of that. And I so resonate with what you say about the power and importance of the imagination in ensuring that these faculties continue to flow, into our later years. And the fact that your parents, as you say, never, never shut anything down, how important that is. And those interesting also that you mentioned those cycles in 7 years, seven being such a profound spiritual number. It comes up in so many of the spiritual texts. But yeah, there's that sense that at around the age of seven, children do begin to, we could venture to say that the layering of the ego becomes more pronounced, and that connection to source, the soul, our own inner light, it begins to be dimmed or seem to be dimmed anyway, but not in your case. And I think that is, as you said, because of all of those various factors. And you mentioned friends and family played a role, and you described, the cousins, and that's all beautiful. But you touched on your godmother, who I think, Ben, is that your auntie that was also a student of A Course in Miracles? And she played a really big role in your spiritual development.
Definitely, yeah. She was my dad's sister. She passed a few years ago. She was a bit older to him, and she's obviously the mum of those two cousins that played all those imagination games with me. Yeah, I mean, again, looking back, I realize now she was really out there on her own, amongst her own family as well. Her parents, which are my dad's parents, were, had come back from World War II. My grandfather was an engineer in the army, and so I think Dad had kids a little bit older when he'd arrived back. And a really, really traditional kind of, which was a common at that time kind of lifestyle. Although I must admit, when I look at my grandfather's life, he was really amazing in the sense that he totally had the left and right brain both working simultaneously and that kind of masculine exterior, but he had a very gentle emotional side. A couple of things really stand out to me in his life. Just what he achieved. He had that property that we were playing on was his, well, my grandparents' property. He had a stainless steel workshop for his engineering. He had an aluminium workshop dedicated for that, a wood workshop. But he also had greenhouses, a hydroponic setup from, I think, the 1970s, grow tomatoes and strawberries in winter. He also had a cinema that he built with real cinema seats, and he made movies and showed them to his friends of all kinds of different things. He played the banjo, and he and my grandma taught ballroom dancing from their property. So I think some of that got passed down to me, when my wife wrote Inventor, because he was an inventor. And yeah, some of that's definitely rubbed out on me. And I've had some amazing experiences actually with him on the other side, so to speak, my development. And he was crucial in, some really pivotal moments in my life when I was, going through some tough times as a young adult, coming to terms with all of this kind of stuff. So yeah, but going back to her name was Denise. My auntie, we called her Nisi, and yeah, she ran yoga classes. I think she was a vegetarian. I think she was actually a fruitarian at the time, for her entire adult life. And she had circles in her home, meditation, psychic development. And she also, as you said, ran Course in Miracles workshops from her home. She also ran the local animal aid, and she lived on property as well in Lang Warren, and they had a lot of rescue animals. Yeah, we only saw each other briefly a couple of times a year, and I think the universe did it that way because I would be out in the kind of mundane world for most of my life, learning, 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 learning. And then I felt like every time I was at my wit's end, I'd go and visit my auntie, and all of a sudden everything would open up again, and all the possibilities and tools and ways of integrating what I'd been doing throughout my year would kind of come together just with this gentle guidance that she would give. And a lot of it wasn't completely, transmitted consciously, but obviously, this is something I've learned as well through my own spiritual development, is, our lives are our messages, aren't they? It's who we are, the way we function in the world, the way we do things, as well as what we say. That make a big impact on people. And I think, because of the time that she was doing that work in, she wasn't really understood a lot by her family, although everybody absolutely adored her. But having the kind of makeup that I had when I watched her, when I witnessed her at family gatherings and just spending time with her around her property, just the way she would go about life, treading so lightly with such a subtle energy. And I think there was a lot of energetic kind of understanding that I was able to take on.
That's lovely what you say. Yeah, that our life is our message. How we could think of it as what we model, but it's beyond that. It's what we are and how we move through the world. Yeah, that being what stays with people, that energetic imprint. That's beautiful. So you mentioned those kind of hard years as an adolescent, coming to terms with all of these extraordinary experiences. And I'd love you to share a little bit more around what you were actually experiencing at that time and how it affected you. And then there was another enormous catalyst in your life at around still when you were a teenager, the loss of your brother. So maybe, Ben, if we can talk a bit about the experiences that you were having as a 16-year-old that were so, I guess, disconcerting in many ways, confronting, but yet on another level, you also knew that this was you and this was true and it was right. So I can feel that tension and the difficulty as a teenage boy holding those two things.
Yeah, so I guess as you mentioned, around the age of, 15, 16, you're becoming a young man. And in my particular case, I had a really large family group around me, my mum's side of the family, who are, a big Irish Catholic family. They had a lot of gatherings, they all lived in our neighborhood, and I think 20, 26, 27 cousins on my mum's side. I've never counted them. Funnily enough, the majority of them were female, are female. But the kind of empathetic side that I obviously have, and the sensitivity, which had remained open, became quite uncomfortable when society starts to put those, how would I put it, norms, social norms, where, and part of it, the Irish Catholic celebration thing, everyone's having a drink, and this might, paint a little bit of a picture of my point, that I found when people would, let their hair down at a party, so to speak, or just a gathering, everyone having a couple of drinks, and it might be someone's birthday, or it might be, whatever it was, I found that that emotional connection would come out, where people would start talking about their feelings, especially after a few drinks. And I was like, oh, great, because, this is my world. I'm always thinking about how people feel, how I feel. There's so much I've left unexpressed as a young, as at around that age, because you do start to slip into societal norms at that age, and you don't want to make people feel uncomfortable by saying, hey, why are you acting like this? Because as an empathetic person, or even psychic person, you might know, you just know that they're really troubled on one level, or they might not be saying what they're thinking. And that creates tension for someone in my position. And I think a lot of people had this experience, again, whether they're even perhaps unconscious of it, where they have a lot of trouble relaxing because the words that are coming out of other people's mouths, and even perhaps the actions that they're taking, don't necessarily represent what's actually going on inside. So that dynamic, which was constantly in my face, was very uncomfortable. And then, as I said, when people were relaxing, letting their hair down, having a few drinks at a party, all of a sudden people would want to go there a little bit. And the shame is that, and I'm not saying it's good or bad, it's just the nature of people having a drink, what it does to the nervous system. It's not done, I guess, freely of their own will. It's through an external means, which also brings with it what it does to the nervous system, kind of slows the nervous system down and makes them less sensitive, perhaps pulls away that veil a little bit. And then when the party's over next day and whatever, and I'm still there, I'm still in that emotional availability place, where I want to know how people are really, and the walls going back up again. And so that was such a hard thing to navigate, because yeah, you just don't know what to do, and you do start to shut down sometimes, because you're like, well, no one else is sharing anything with me, and if I push it, which I did a little with the people I really love, like trying to press them a little bit about deeper emotional things, they became very defensive and uncomfortable, which made it even more uncomfortable for me. But yeah, I didn't give up at that stage, and I think I kept my mum up at night many a time, my late teen years, asking her the meaning of the universe, and she's, she was great. She had no answers really, but she would just listen. And, at some point, really late in the evening, say, I'm tired. I better go to bed now. Good night.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about those two sort of big areas of questioning. So you were very interested in people and in what was true. And how did you put it? You wanted to know how people are really. Yeah, I love that. And I so relate to that as well. And people, I would venture to say, like you, like me, and like many of my audience, you kind of can cut out small talk, or you would like to if it was permissible. and go there. But I so relate to that tension. But the what I wanted to share is that I feel that your questioning around those huge questions: what is the nature of the universe? What is life? What is death, perhaps? And wanting to know how a person truly is, like there's a relationship between those two. So it's almost like an innate understanding that we are the universe, or the universe is within us and without us. I'm not sure if I'm expressing that correctly, but I just see that that parallel relationship between your questioning and wanting to know more about an individual and also more about the universe. It's like it's one and the same.
Yeah, definitely. And I've realized that, and it's an ongoing learning curve. As humans, I now realize we never stop learning, and to remain open is a wonderful gift that you can give yourself. And as you sort of, mentioned before, that then went into another really big catalyst. I did have those questions before this event happened, but obviously it really magnified that deep desire to understand what's the nature of, what's it all about. And that's obviously when my brother passed away. So out of the three kids, I was the youngest. I have a sister who's, probably a year and a half older to me, and my brother was, 11, 12 months older than her. So we were quite close together. And it was a profound thing. I've for a long time viewed it as a gift that he gave everybody he touched. In other words, living a full-on life and then leaving early has a massive impact on a huge level. Just to give a bit of an idea, at his funeral, so he was 21, he was an apprentice plumber to my father. He was the guy that every girl wanted to date. He was the bloke every boy in the neighborhood wanted to be like. He was a mixture of John Mellencamp, Bon Jovi, and James Dean. He was vivacious. He was unpredictable. He was, lived life right on the edge of risk-taking, and also that larrikin and just lovable person that did a lot of cheeky and naughty things, but were all designed to have fun or to make someone laugh. And, the flip side of that, because, his immediate family knew him so well, and again, reflecting back as an adult that's done a bit of work on themselves, I realized how fragile he was emotionally and how fragile a lot of young men are in Australia and probably the world. So yeah, he was in a tragic car accident and was, killed instantly. And at the funeral, there was probably over 1,000 young people in a very traditional church in the Melbourne southeast suburbs. And so much so, they opened the doors and I spoke at one point. I think out of all the young people that wanted to speak, I remember one the other getting up and not even being able to speak. That's how, emotional this whole vibe was at the funeral. But something in me was just so ready to say what I wanted to say about him. And so when I stood up, I remember looking out over the crowd of people in the church and then out the door, and there was a much larger crowd out of the door, spilling out, closing the whole street off. And yeah, so that's really, in a nutshell, why I see it as a gift. Because still to this day, and I think my mum told me the other day, it's been 30 years this year since he left this world, and I still have messages on his anniversary and his birthday from people all over the world, just reminiscing and just having a laugh about something funny that he did, because there were so many. Yeah, but in terms of my own spiritual unfoldment, that had a really huge impact. I already saw death as a transition as opposed to an end. I innately knew that the soul is continuous. I'd had enough experiences to realize that deep down. And that was the burning desire, was actually to understand how it actually works and what we can do to come to peace with that. And yeah, I'm not sure how much you want me to share on that, but we developed a communication shortly after he passed that was quite profound and lasted for quite a few years in an intense way until it became more of a completion.
I'd love you to share more. I remember you did share about the astounding dream that you had not long after your brother passed away. Yeah, maybe please do share that story, Ben, and whatever else you find that would perhaps be of service to share around that ongoing communication.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I already viewed death very differently from the rest of my family. So while everyone else was, I guess, going through their own version of grief, I obviously was still grieving and probably still in shock on the human level, because this was only perhaps a week or so after he passed away. I'd been doing a lot of meditation and I used to, lay on the bed in the family home. I think I was like 17 at the time. And I would go into my breath and go into just that, a really simple traditional meditation where you just start at the top of your head and just slowly relax each part of your body. And I used that to calm myself down. And obviously in that time it was a really appropriate use of it. But when I do that, I also realize now with my channeling that that's part of the process of opening the door to much, much more. And so I was kind of doing that unwittingly. And I would go from meditation into, I guess, an etheric kind of dream state, which is a very light, lucid dreaming, I guess a lot of people call it. So I was still aware of my body in the bed, and I knew I was Ben, who'd lost his brother and was laying on the bed in his family home, So it wasn't like a dream where I'm getting ready for bed, hop into bed, have a dream, and wake up and go, wow, that was an amazing dream. It was very much a meditative state. And in this vision dream, I just went into a really peaceful state and saw like a void that I was drawn into, kind of like just being hanging in space, but there was no stars or anything. It felt very safe. It didn't feel strange. It just felt very calm. And as I found myself sort of settling into that void, a point of white light opened up in the edge of my vision. And very much like what people describe in near-death experiences, I believe, that point of light opened up. But instead of me being drawn to the light, I saw it open up big enough to be a portal, and it was very bright and beautiful. And men started walking through from that side into where I was. And there was maybe 8 or 10 men. And a table kind of appeared in the void in front of me. And I noticed that one of them was guiding my brother in, just had his hand on his back and was just sort of ushering him forward. And I recognized all of these familial features on these men. And I thought, oh, that's my Uncle Kevin, but hang on, my Uncle Kevin's still alive, whatever. And then realized that they were, past ancestors on my mother's side, which my brother really resonated with. And the one that was holding him, I believe, was my grandfather on my mum's side, who I didn't spend a lot of time with because he passed when I was 2. Although mum said, he had a really special spot for you. And they all sat down at this table and they ushered my brother opposite in the chair to me, sat him down and just motioned for me to sit down. And I looked across at my brother and it was quite confronting because his face was just blank. His expression was completely blank, as if the word that comes to mind is catatonic. He was just, his eyes were open, but he was staring right through everything. He wasn't focused on anything. And as is the way for, these kind of communications, it's like a mental transmission. And so my grandfather transmitted to me the information that this is an opportunity that you guys have. If there's anything you want to say to each other or share before he goes where he's going. And I found it very hard to speak. I felt like I got a big lump in my throat and I couldn't get it out. And my grandfather said, "No worries, it's fine." And he said the same thing to my brother. And when he did, my brother's eyes just flickered for a moment as if he was waking up from a dream. And he just kind of looked at me for a split second. And then he opened his mouth and this rainbow colored flames came shooting out of his mouth, just absolute, like caricatured rainbow colored fire, like plasma or something like that. And it came right out, extended towards me, and then slowly retracted. And he closed his eyes again and closed his mouth. And my grandfather said, "That's enough for the moment. That's enough." And everyone stood up and they started walking out. And as they filed through this circle of light, this portal, I tried to follow them. And my grandfather just looked back and said to me, "No, you can't come." And I found myself back in my body, in my bed. And although, consciously I didn't know what to make of it, I just felt like it was a start. It was the start of something. And I knew that he was being taken care of, that he had people where he was that were loved ones, that were supportive, that had his best intention at heart. And that was really profound. So it really lightened. I shared a little bit with my family over the years about the connection that I had with my brother over the next 2 years after that first experience. And it did bring them quite a lot of solace, but yeah, it was quite confrontational for them as well to hear, after so many years now, they've really accepted the messages that I give from the other side in that way.
So
They're
tell
not
us a
always.
little bit about the communications from your brother over those 2 years. What was the substance of that, if you don't mind sharing?
Not at all. I'd love to. So it's really interesting because he taught me to play guitar. He was, quite a talented musician and, played in a band with his friends, and he was very, poetic. He wrote a lot of songs and that was our thing. He taught me my first few chords, and we also had this ongoing joke because I practiced really hard and kind of got better than him pretty quickly, and he got annoyed with that.
What was his
Yeah.
name?
His name was Marcus.
Marcus.
Yeah. Actually just found out recently that his story is featured in a couple of books.
Oh.
Yeah, there's an Australian actress called Pia Miranda, and she's written a memoir recently.
Yes, I know of her memoir. I haven't read it. I heard it's really good.
I haven't read it. I need to read it because Marcus is in
Oh,
it.
wow.
They dated, yeah. I think he took her to her high school formal. Yeah, and another wonderful psychic that I know that shared some of his stories through me. Anyway, the reason that that's important is that when I would go through that same process and start a meditation, drifting off into the evening, I would find myself in nature. And sometimes it would be a familiar place, as if we were out the backyard of my grandparents' property that I mentioned earlier. And he would just appear from like behind the tree. And I would just get just this massive burst of like excitement and oh cool, you're here. And he would be holding a guitar. It's like we couldn't talk to each other. And instead of, struggling to communicate mentally because he wasn't able to do that, this was probably 6 months after that it started happening really clearly. And he would just sit and start strumming the guitar. And then I would have a guitar too, sit down with him, and we would just sort of jam. We would just play this really calm, relaxing jam. And that musical connection was our first connection on the other side, where we just start to, yeah, just sort of meet up and just share what we did on Earth, when he was alive, music. And as that continued on, I just noted I really noticed a progression in his energy. Every time he would appear to me in these states, he would be more whole, more calm, and more purpose, and more himself. That's This is a really interesting thing, Karina, I've found with the experiences I've had with entities on the other side, people that have passed that I've known or that I haven't known, that when they're wherever they are, especially if it's a really positive connection, they kind of present to me in their perfect state. I see them, I hear them mentally. But what really stands out is often they're just in this amazing state. They may be that it's almost as if they're always at the perfect age. My grandfather on my father's side appeared to me, the one that played the banjo a few times, and he was just in his prime, which I didn't know him in his prime, but he presented to me when he was in his prime and a little bit taller. They always seem a little bit taller and just emanating so much energy and so much love. And that was definitely the case for my brother. And it progressed and it got to a point. I'll share one other dream that I had because it was really another turning point where it was kind of the second last really clear dream I had of him, connection that I had. And so after that development of our ability to communicate, we got to a point where we could freely communicate mentally and he would just tell me what's going on and where he was at. That would be brief moments. Because of the nature of mental telepathy, shall I say, it doesn't have to take a long time. These massive thought packets just get given to you. And when you wake up, you might retain part of it, some of it. It's all there. But yeah, that's another whole conversation. But he really said to me, and it was actually when I was driving, I ended up being an apprentice to my father as a mature age apprentice. And, I was driving to work one day and he kind of just made his presence aware while I was driving and told me this really kind of interesting thing. And he said, "Look, I'm gonna come in your dream tonight and take you to show you exactly what I'm doing. And I'm inviting you to come with me." And I was like, "Whoa, okay, cool." And sure enough, it happened. And he, in this state, in this dream state, he told me even where to meet him. Which was in a car park, and he drove up in a Toyota Land Cruiser Ute, and which he loved, and opened the door, and he was wearing this huge sort of trench coat, and he had one on the passenger seat for me, and he invited me to put it on. He said, "Actually, no, you have to put this on." So I put this big heavy coat on, and they both had hoods, and he said, "Put your hood on." It's like, okay. So I put my hood on and we started driving down the road. And it was really quite eerie. I felt very safe with him. But we were in a realm where it was kind of post-apocalyptic feel. And there was a lot of desolation and broken down cars on the side of the road that were burnt out and no people sort of seemed to be around. But we got to an abandoned train station and he actually lifted like a pit lid off the ground. And we climbed down into this kind of like stormwater drain. And when we got to the bottom, there was people just sort of strewn all over the ground on mattresses and, like homeless people and drug addicts and whatnot. And he was looking for a particular person, searching around. And finally he comes across this guy and he picks the guy up and pushes him gently against the wall, or kind of gently, a bit roughly, I suppose. And looked him in the eye and he still had his hood on and said to the guy, "I told you last time, mate, if you were here when I got back, there'd be trouble," basically. And the guy just, pushed him away or tried to push him away and said, "F off." Then my brother just very calmly pulled back his hood of this big jacket and these big like mane of blonde hair that he had was just glowing. It's just this massive auric gold came from his whole face and head. So much so it actually lit this whole space up that we were in. And the guy just got such a kind of overwhelmed shock. And he was just beaming at the guy. And the guy sort of just shook his head, looked around left and right and said, "All right, yeah, just give me a second." He picked up like a bag and some stuff, put it under his elbow, and he followed us out. And my brother got him to sit in the back of the ute and we dropped him off somewhere. And then, yeah, another couple of little events like that. came across a young two young boys that were fighting, and he went and had a word to them, and I was just standing on the side watching. Then he dropped me back off and left, and obviously I took it that, well, that's what he's doing now. That's where he is. Kind of makes sense for the person he was to doing that kind of work.
That is such a profound story. My goodness. So, to me, that indicates that he's doing some sort of soul rescue work of young people, something that resonates with the stage of life that he was at when he left the earth.
Definitely.
In that, and that, it's almost like he would, I don't know, tell me what you think. Is he a spirit guide? Is that what an angel is? Like, what do you think is going on there?
I do. I think it's it shows that there are so many possibilities, and again, through many years going by since that occurrence and the work that I've done with the channeling, especially because I've asked a lot of those questions, and there's almost as many answers as there is things that you could imagine. you know, my view of the other side and traditional mediumship, I think it's really developed in the sense that it has a foundation and a platform where people can understand from their, you know, very linear experience. And that really serves a purpose. So, you know, the traditional reader who does a reading for someone and connects with someone, a loved one, an ancestor on the other side, or a friend, works within a framework that has been developed over a long period of time. When you're the person experiencing it and perhaps not coming through that lineage of, you know, traditional psychics, this was something that I believe has happened to me as a byproduct of my own personal and spiritual development, because the crown, the third eye, and the heart are all opening in those moments, as well as if you're awake, your connection to the earth. And so I think the answer is yes to all of the above kind of thing. I think he's definitely been, yeah, rescuing people.
It's just a wonderful sort of other side of the coin to, for instance, in the 90s, there were so many television shows such as It's a Miracle or This Happened. And then you get people on Earth living in the flesh saying, this extraordinary thing happened. I was down in the gutter. I was about to take my own life, and this person appeared. And it's almost like that's the other side. That's your brother's work. He's one of those helpers. It's very beautiful, and it just shows the richness of life. And it's on all these invisible levels that we can't, for a lot of the time, access. But people like you, for various reasons, can. So, I guess we should, even though your entire life story is very fascinating, and I think perhaps we should come back and have another episode one day entirely dedicated to mediumship, to after-death communication, to the other side, to what we call ghosts and spirits. But let's get into your channeling and how that all emerged now that we've got that understanding of, the road that was paved for you towards that. But again, it began with a dream and a mantra that you were given, and then an extraordinary happening in a bookshop the very next day.
Yeah, it sort of ceases to amaze me when I say these words out loud, you know, this story, because no matter how much I've done on letting go of what other people think, I still think they probably think I'm crazy. But at the same time, you know, in this story, there's real people, these are real events, and there's, you know, photographic proof and a bunch of people that were there. So I'll just say that before starting, and I'm kind of joking. Yeah, well. Again, this whole story starts, as you mentioned, with a dream. And the reason I now know this dream occurred is because I asked for something very, very clearly to the universe. I made, you know, a massive call, almost a, you know, it was in desperation, you know, I guess like when people in the dark night of the soul, although it didn't feel very dark, it was more that I was at my wit's end. I'd felt like I'd done everything in my power to understand these burning questions, yet I wasn't getting the answers. I wasn't getting them fast enough. I wasn't, I was still just angsty. And I was, in the time, it's a little bit blurry, but I think, I was probably 20 at the time this happened. And so again, went into a meditative state. I think I'd done a Vipassana course prior to doing having this particular dream. And Vipassana, for those who don't know, is a silent retreat for 10 days in a very traditional set of circumstances where you just go and meditate pretty much all day long. You eat very lightly, and it's just going through a process of bringing up anything that no longer serves you to the surface to move away in a very balanced and sustainable way that you can use in your daily life. It's the teaching that comes, very traditionally from the Siddhartha Gautama Buddha. So we all hear stories of the Buddha that sat under the Bodhi tree to gain enlightenment. This is, according to many, the actual technique that he used. And it's a worldwide offering that anyone can participate in. I loved it because it was free. And it's all done from the heart service. You get beautiful food. You stay in a place, amazing places all over the world, and just do your silent torture. So I just prefacing with that because I think again that a lot of these experiences happen as a, for want of a better word, byproduct. So in this particular dream, again, I just found myself arriving somewhere. And in this dream, I arrived in a huge stadium, and it was a cricket stadium, like a traditional British style cricket stadium with ornate lattice on the grandstands and that whole British vibe. But I realized it was obvious that I was in like an India type country because there was all Indian looking people everywhere, and this whole cricket oval, all the grandstands and the seating was absolutely full. And it was in a natural amphitheater, like a huge natural amphitheater, where even the hills around were on slopes, and even all of those hills were full of people. And so, if you can imagine all the hills around a cricket stadium being full with people, people even climbing up trees to get a view, the grandstands full, and the entire cricket oval being full, there would have been, who knows, quite a few 100,000 people there. And I found myself at the back of a grandstand, and there was just happened to be a few other Westerners close to me. And everyone was dressed in white. And the focus of everybody's attention was right down in the middle of this oval, where out of the white sea of clothes, I noticed like a little golden pagoda style, like a little platform, not very big, just enough for a few people to stand on, with a parasol, a beautifully, Indian parasol to shade whoever was under it from sun. And I'll just rewind a little bit. That question that I had when I went to sleep that night was basically a call out to the universe saying that I've given my best. I've done, as much. And I look back kind of going, yeah, well, okay, whatever. You're young, you're just kind of angsty. But at the same time, I really believe there was something deep within me that just had that yearning to understand and to go further than what I'd been able to get to date. And as I looked down at that parasol, it just tilted to the side. And I was obviously a long way away. But in that instant, when the parasol tilted away to reveal who was there, I just got these two eyes came up and just hovered in front of me. And so I could just see someone's face and just the eyes and the nose, again, like hanging in space. But this time it was as if I was amongst the stars. And the most intense energy I'd ever felt coming out of those eyes. And it just mentally asked me a question, which was, are you sure? Like, are you really sure this is what you want? You want the answers to the universe. And what I've realized now, everything that comes with that. And I said, yes, I am. And then I just felt this overwhelming sense of love. And then I started to hear this mantra, which was, I now realize, the Gayatri mantra, which is a very traditional ancient, sort of, they call it the mother of all mantras, or the mother mantra, yeah. And it's basically a Sanskrit mantra, which is really beautiful. And it just means, may this body, my embodiment in this lifetime, become a channel for peace, really. It's saying, you know, my crown, my third eye, please allow the divine energy to flow down through this body, through my energy centers, and be grounded into Mother Earth so I can spread the light and love of the universe to firstly myself and to all those I come in contact with, and may everyone in the universe be free. So this repeated over and over, this mantra, and I just drifted back into deep sleep state, hearing this mantra over and over. So much so that I woke up in the morning and it was like it was on loop in my head. And yeah, this is the hard thing to describe, but I could actually remember it. It's not a very long mantra, but I could kind of remember the whole thing and what it was called. And I straight away hopped in my car and drove to a resource center that I knew of, I'd heard of, that had a lot of books on meditation and Indian mantras and these kinds of things. And yeah, I just rocked up there and started straight away, went into their library and started flipping through books. And this was a volunteer run place in Melbourne. And the lady who was behind the counter said, oh, do you want any help, mate? And I sort of hesitated for a minute and I said, well, I want to know about this Gayatri mantra and the meaning of it. She said, oh yeah, we've got a whole entire section on that. Come over here. So we're flipping through different books and she's saying, this one's, you know, they're all different interpretations and whatnot. And she kind of looked at me funny and said, well, why do you want to know this? Like, why are you asking? And I felt for some reason confident enough to say, well, I had this dream last night, blah, blah, blah. Told her the whole thing. And she just took it in her stride and said, oh yeah, hang on a sec. And then she went over to another section and pulled out a magazine. They're just a thin sort of magazine style paper, and opened it into the middle spread, you know, where the staples are in the middle. It's like a double page feature article. And lo and behold, there's the cricket stadium with all the people dressed in white and the little pagoda in the middle and the umbrella. And I was like, whoa. And she goes, well, you know where you were. And I said, no. And then she pointed to a picture on the wall of an Indian sort of guru looking guy. And she said, oh, you were at Sai Baba's birthday celebrations that he does in, I think it's Whitefield in India every year. And everyone dresses in white. And they chant the Gayatri mantra 1,008 times from 4 a.m. until they're finished. And it's actually was his birthday yesterday. And I was like, wow. But to be honest, I wasn't even, my mind wasn't engaged during this whole experience I had with Sai Baba. My mind wasn't engaged because it was so overwhelming, all experiences. And that was just the beginning, the things that happened to me during my time with Sai Baba when he was alive, go to a place that are really, you know, profound. But I've had experiences with Sai Baba. They won't find this, you know, unbelievable, because many people have had these kind of experiences with him. So he's known as a triple avatar, a being that's come to help usher in the new age. And he always said, you don't need to know who I am to be part of the process. Source energy embodies in various forms throughout the ages for particular reasons in certain cultural nuances to serve. And that was his life. And he then, through that dream, I realized, answered my call. And I ended up being taught by him, and I won't go into all that now because it'll probably take too long, but I ended up being taught by him directly with a small group of about 18 people in what is known as like satsang, which is company of truth, where you learn. And he taught us scratch, you know, like he said, you're in spiritual kindergarten at the moment. So, you know, he really took us down to realize to let go of our ego and our minds. That really opened me up. And again, that kind of was a stepping stone towards, well, more than a stepping stone, It was one of the reasons I believe I began the inner practice because, in a nutshell, what he taught and imparted, and the answer that I was given, and sometimes it needs to be given in really miraculous ways to realize the simplicity of it, to fulfill that kind of monkey mind, for me at least anyway, my mind rushing around in every direction, wanting to understand all of these profound things. But in a nutshell, it was that we're all one. The universe, God, mother, father, all that is, whatever you want to call it, is love. To live in love, live in service. You are your own master. The source of all resides in you. And the human reality is an opportunity to embody that. And that's how he referred to us when he saw us. He called us the embodiments of love, and he calls all human beings embodiments of love. And so that was an amazing few years that lasted for a couple of years. But I guess, yeah, if you'd like me to move on to then what the channeling started to,
Yes, I would. And I think just before you do, I do think we should come back and do another episode around the not just the after-death communications and your experiences there, but maybe you can share more about this time of yours one-on-one with this extraordinary avatar, one of the most well-known of all of them. And I don't know, I might throw in here, you said that lots of people have had experiences with him, and I even had my own little story. So
Talk to the last.
I'll quickly share it. So it was after I had read about you on Facebook through Alicia, who's a mutual friend of ours and one of my earlier interviewees, Alicia Dumay Temmerman. And in between making that sort of introduction that she made to you and then us getting in touch, I had a dream. And it was this dream of me being in a room with Westerners learning, and it was like a lounge room. It was a lounge room, and on the wall, and I knew there was a man talking and teaching, and on the wall there was an artwork, and the artwork was alive, and it was a picture of, and what I understood to be some sort of Indian avatar, and I shared this with you when we had our pre-chat, and what this Indian avatar was doing, the picture was alive and his eyes were following me as I was in the room. And then when you began to tell me this story about Satya Sai Baba, I said, "Oh, what did he look like?" And you told me he had this big afro. And I said, "Oh, well, the person that I saw was an older man, very elegant with a kind of white beard and white hair." And you said, "Oh, yeah, that's him too. He represents as this being that incarnated hundreds of years ago." And indeed, I looked him up and there he was. So I just could not believe it. It was extraordinary. And he came sort of as a little, I don't know, a little good work, maybe encouraging moment. I'm not sure, but that was amazing, Ben.
Yeah, that's great. Sai Baba would always describe those things as as a leela, and that's the Sanskrit word for divine play.
Oh, I love
Synchronicity,
that.
something that we, I guess, associate with that, and also, magical dreams and just moments in time where, yeah, because like you said, you'd had that dream before I told you my story, and yeah, it's just
Divine play. I love that. Leela and synchronicity is how we see it. I love it. So let's come back and sh talk more about that another time, but let's get on to the now. What is the name of the group that get in touch with you? It's here. I'm trying to read it. The Masters of Light. Tell us how they came into your life and began to make themselves known.
The group that I channel, and I'll get into that in a moment, have actually never given a specific name. Myra, who lovingly put together a few words about what I do to share with you. She's so desperate for them to give us a name. And it's part of the divine play, I feel. And they're not opposed to it. But obviously, entities such as the ones that come through my body in this channeling way are of a frequency and dimension where they're not speaking in English amongst themselves. They're speaking the vibratory language of universal consciousness. And it doesn't mean they're fluent in English and perhaps all the languages that are spoken in the known universe. Who knows? But that's a good question. I might ask them that. So anyway, yeah, I do definitely have a really clear sense of where they're from, and they've shared some of that. I've often sort of hesitated around sharing, a lot of information that they've shared with me about their origins and perhaps how we can view where they are. And obviously, that's a linear thing. Space is where. So in the kind of frequency that they exist, there is no time and space in the way that we know it. They do have a framework of reality that is real for them, like this world is real for us. And there's also an intrinsic and deep connection with humanity. So I can touch a little bit more on that. I've always perceived them as white light, but also with a real blue hue and kind of just this beautiful outline of electric blue. And it's a group consciousness, although they still have individuality in some sense, but in a lot looser framework than we would as our dense bodies. They're light beings, and they have a group consciousness in the sense that when one of their race, for want of a better word, has a thought, they all have that awareness simultaneously. So there's no separation in that sense. And it's not so much like, some people have described that as like a hive kind of mind. It's not that, because I get a sense of it when I'm channeling. It's more of just an absolute freedom where nobody has any walls around them, and everybody still has the opportunity to be ultimately creative and come up with new stuff. It's just that they don't all have to go and have that individual thought. They all instantaneously share in that. So they've slowly, over the time that I've been working with them, for me and those that are close to me that have worked with them, like my wife, have built this kind of framework of understanding and really opened our minds to multidimensionality, more of who we all are and more of what we're capable of, and a little bit of, well, actually quite a lot of kind of esoteric and energetic understanding about the innate nature of the universe and how forms are created and those kinds of things before really getting onto that topic of where they come from, who they are, and those kinds of things. But they've really intimated a lot about being, in one way, a future version of humanity. And that's limiting to say that. But I'm just giving you a few phrases that sparked my interest when they shared. Also part of like a starseed group. They are, feel to me, both like family, ancestors, loved ones, and sort of soul guides all wrapped up into one. I believe they do come or reside in and around the energy of Sirius B in the constellation of Orion. Although they're not, they've mentioned that there are beings there as well, which they're connected to, but aren't the same as. So all of that stuff kind of gets really interesting for a lot of people. They've always really focused on their mission and their kind of prime directive. And so I can share a little bit about what that is if you like.
Yes, I'm wondering if they would like to share a message with us now. I'll leave this entirely up to you, Ben, or if you would just like to continue on the track that you were on before.
No, I mean, they're very happy to do that. Yeah, I'm really happy to do that, and I know they are too. So maybe let's just hear it directly. I'll just have a quick look at the time, because nonlinear beings, it's amazing, hey, with the channeling. My wife's often present during the channelings, and I often ask her to keep an eye on the time, because I lose all sense of time when I channel. But funnily enough, they don't. So often we've had this experience with groups where the split second I'm in channel, and I might just, when I'm in channel, I'm having very few thoughts because that's the process, letting go is what opens the door. But I'm still awake and aware. And sometimes there's just little tiny thought patterns that I can feel arising. And one of them is like, oh, I wonder whether it's time to finish now. And then the moment they wind up, I look at the clock and it's often like ticks straight over to the perfect minute when it's supposed to finish. But anyway, I'll hand over to them. So my process just before I begin is very simple. I just take a couple of deep breaths and center myself. And I've come to a point now after so long working with them that they're practically with me the whole time. And I'm going through a slow but sure process of merging with them all together. And that's part of my personal journey. So they'll be able to explain more about that. We are here, dear ones. We are delighted to connect with you in this way. We have a lot of gratitude for this opportunity, not only for Ben and Karina, but also for anyone who hears this in their time. So thank you, Karina, for this opportunity. Thank you, Ben, for this opportunity, for these moments when Ben surrenders to allow us to be present with you, an energy of expansion, opportunity arises. So we invite Karina, if you like, to ask a question, or we are happy to also just to go with the energy of whatever arises.
Thank you. I would be more than happy for you to go with the energy of what arises.
Indeed. Ben was speaking about our prime directive and that which we have connected with humanity for. We are actually joking with him this morning about this concept of prime directive. Well, he was watching an old Star Trek episode and the phrase prime directive came up. And in this story, the prime directive of the Federation of Planets, of which the main characters of this TV show are, they have this prime directive, which is non-interference with developing races on various planets. So the story goes that as the particular soul group or energy of that planet evolves to a point in their consciousness, in their technology, where they begin to look to the stars to begin to develop technology that may take them to other intelligence, it is only then that the Federation can make contact for fear of altering their trajectory. And although there are some similarities, we would like to point out or share our prime directive. There is a similarity because it is one of non-interference. And it is also similar because although humanity have not, in the general public anyway, reached a point at which they are traveling to other intelligent civilizations. Yet the reality of it is, humanity have reached a point in their evolution, in their expansion, where the connection to those intelligences, not only in neighboring physicality, but in neighboring energy, are. So if you ask the question, who are we? We are not only your neighbors energetically, we are part of a grander story of human evolution. And so the mission we are on is to connect with those who ask, who intend, who want to understand more of who they truly are, of who all truly are, how best to find this. And we would always direct them to themselves. For we often share the greeting, "We are here." We are where we are. You are where we are. And when those two energetic realities overlay, we are all here. And in these moments where we are energetically connected, in this scenario through Ben, we are one. And we are here to share this message, for we exist in a framework of reality where we are one. We are one in thought. We are one in deed. We are one in that which we wish to share with the rest of existence. And we wish to build and remind anyone who chooses to discover your latent abilities, the opportunity that you find yourself in this linear space-time reality. There are many subjects that we love to share. And so in this moment, we really understand the connections. So what we are doing now is we are vibrating in a frequency that is like a musical scale. So if there are notes in a scale like do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do in your scale, the energy of the do at the start is Ben's vibration. Then as the frequency gets a little higher, a little higher, a little higher, this is like a transformer. So we are able to alter the vibration of our song, of our symphony, of which you are a part. The entire universe is playing vibrational symphonies all the time. The harmonizing of these songs allow this channeling process to occur. So if there are those of you who are interested in this process, and not only this process of channeling in body, vocally like Ben is doing now, but channeling what it is that is your true purpose. For that is a buzzword everywhere in your world right now, finding your purpose, manifesting your new reality. This is because the door has opened to this new possibility, and it has been through the development, the work that has been put on or put in by each individual that wishes to know themselves. There are many techniques and practices that have been on this earth for a very long time that are now being spread through the amazing technology that is what we call the alternet. We have this joke with Ben calling the internet the alternet, because it is a communication channel that goes to all that have the receiver device and the sending device. And the reason we joke about it is because you have this potential within, and that is, from our perspective, the true internet. Your body, your physiology, your energy is a divinely created sending and receiving unit. And this goes to every level of psychic awareness, every level of empathy, and everything in between. Because this energetic body that overlays your physical body, that animates your physical body, has so many gifts and so many abilities. And it is in this time, which is a catalytic time, the end of a material age and the dawning of a new age of truth, that is incidentally all coinciding with your journey through your galaxy, your solar system. Everything is in alignment for this support where rather than one student being selected by one master to have the deep truth teaching, the information is for all to see. And rather than the aspirant having to go and sit in a cave in the Himalayas for 20 years in the snow to have access to these kinds of potentials, all have access to that because it is now out there. It is held energetically, indeed, by Mother Earth's aura. So we are touching on a few things here. All of it is to say, remember who you truly are, for you are an embodiment of love. You are divine creativity incarnate. You have the potential, and all have the potential to take that wherever they want. There are universal laws that govern the way energy flows. And this opportunity occurs cyclically. So our encouragement would be for each individual to question who they truly are, to find answers to these questions, first through knowledge. Then knowledge practiced becomes understanding. Understanding embodied becomes true wisdom. Wisdom lived becomes unity consciousness. And never has there been a time on earth that this opportunity is more palpable, more tangible. And so this is part of the reason why we are here, and many are tuning in, so to speak, to us through their own embodiments. And this is because the call has been put out by that individual. And the resonant frequency that vibrates with perhaps a part of them that knows us. Well, when we presented ourselves to Ben the first time consciously awake and aware, we said, "We are here, dear one, and you know us." And beyond a shadow of a doubt, he knew that he knew us. And therefore, our entry into communication was relatively smooth. And he asked the questions, we gave our perspective as opposed to answering. But we do not claim to be all-knowing beings. We are simply a neighboring vibration that perhaps you may call a faster vibration that has in many ways understood the nature of 3D reality and moved to a new dimension of reality and continuing our evolution. So there's a little for today. We again have deep gratitude for being given this opportunity. And we all also like to acknowledge that every person, every individual that hears this message created it in some way. For as you know, you create your reality. And in this amazing dimension of 3D linearity, you get to dance, play, create with that immense, limitless energy that is source. And so our gratitude comes from a place of knowing that we expand, you expand, and we come together for when more than one gather for this reason, for truth, self-awareness, the divine source of all that is present. So thank you.
Thank you very, very much for that. I cannot think of a more profound and more beneficial way to end our conversation today, Ben. That was just extraordinary, and I know there are so many points of value there. I was, madly taking notes as they were speaking through you. I mean, there was so much, but just to touch on a couple of the main things that came through to me was the continuity of the message just within our conversation today. So you began telling us about your childhood, your experiences in nature, opening the portal in a way to what followed, and your experiences in nature giving you that understanding of oneness. Then we talked about your aunt and the teachings of A Course in Miracles, which I also read and learn from, and we can sum those up with We Are One in there as well. And then Satya Sai Baba, that was his message too, We Are One. And now we finish with this beautiful, beautiful reminder yet again from this amazing group that comes through you with so much love and care for us all to say that we are one. And I just, yeah, I just am very overjoyed to share this message with the audience today. And I thank you so much, Ben, for coming on the show. I would like you to share before we go where the audience can find you if they would like to know more. You have a YouTube channel. I can include the links to that, to your social media. So do let us know.
Sure. Yeah. It's only been recent. I think I've shared with you that I'd taken that little step forward to put myself in a place basically that anyone can find me if they resonate with the energy. So that's Soul Channeling. Soul Channeling is a page on Facebook that you can look up. That's with two N's and one L in channeling. And also Soul Channeling Official is the YouTube page. And on Facebook, there's a link now where if you want to connect and have more of a conversation privately or, you know, within groups settings, you can. So, yeah, that's there. Thanks, Karina.
Brilliant. I will include these links in the show notes for anybody who would like to go and explore further to do that. I would also invite the audience to message me with questions that they would like me to put to the group that comes through you, Ben. And I think we should come back and perhaps dedicate an episode to answering some of the listener questions that have emerged from our conversation today, if you would like to do that.
That would be absolutely awesome, actually, because for me, that's kind of the way it works. They describe to us many times that, you know, they make these points of that we're co-creating this experience. And in this reality, I notice, and again, it's like in my dream, that what we're putting out and asking for, that is the magnetic attraction that brings the two together. And, you know, it's just turned out so great with Myra because she has those burning questions. And so from the day dot, she sat down with a paper and pen and started jotting down a huge amount of questions for channel. And often they, you know, answer one or two and would have so much information, we'd have to go and debrief about one answer for like a day.
Yeah, that's how I felt listening. And it's interesting that you say that about Myra because I've been very interested in channels for a long time now. And there have been a few of the key channels that have come through over the last few decades have often been a pair working together. And, you know, that comes back to the message that was at the end of the channeling that you shared with us today, you know, where two or more are gathered. And it's that group when you're gathered with with that intention, the same intention. But I can think of the Seth material was Jane Roberts and her husband. And A Course in Miracles was Helen Schuckman and her colleague, Bill Thetford, working together as well. So, and there are others, but they're the two that come to mind. So I'm not surprised to hear you say that about the potency, I guess, that arises out of that, the couple, the pair, or the group. Oh, Abraham Hicks, I guess, is another one she came through very much with. They came through, that lady with her husband. So, yeah, so that's fascinating, Ben.
Jerry Hicks, yeah. Yeah, I had the privilege of meeting them. I think I might have shared that story, but that's another good story for another day too.
I'll jot it down. We've got a lot to keep talking about.
I highly invite those questions too. So anyone who's listening, please get in touch with Karina because that's why they're here.
That's why they're here. Well, I think that that is a beautiful place to end today. Ben, thank you so much for coming on Spirit Sisters. It's been an absolute pleasure and honor and such a delight to be part of this beautiful stage of your journey and this chapter where you're sharing and you are putting out the message in a more public way.
Thanks, Karina. Yeah, I really appreciate it and it's my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Sisters. If you enjoyed this conversation, please subscribe so that you won't miss an episode. And don't forget to rate and review the show. Have an experience you'd like to share with me? Get in touch at my website, karinamachado.com, or find me on Facebook at Karina Machado Author. After all, there's nothing more powerful than a story.